This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. Exciting game last night. Arkansas beats Texas Tech 9-8. We'll talk about it today on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. Plus, we'll look back at last week's series against Alabama and ahead to this week's series in South Carolina. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Kendall King, where it's all about teamwork. Building brands around a design concept, Kendall King takes pride in their skill sets in displays and signing, as well as dot-com photography, content creation, and influencer marketing. The bases are loaded, and the Kendall King team is bringing it home. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
And welcome into our downtown Fayetteville studio for the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Hope you slept well. We did not. Late night last night at Baumwalker Stadium, Nolan Souza with a sac fly at 10:41 p.m. to end an incredible game, Bubba. A game that I don't think halfway through it we thought was going to maybe end the way that it did. Arkansas down 7-0. They beat Texas Tech 9-8 on Souza's sac fly in the ninth. It's the largest comeback that Arkansas has had to win a game since 2017 against Louisiana Tech. They played a game down there in the non-conference in 17 and were down 10-1, came back and won that one 13-10, a 7-run deficit. You just don't see that get covered very often in any level, but especially not an SEC or a quality team. Texas Tech, not an SEC team, but a real quality program.
Right. I tell you what, it was huge for this team, though, Matt. I mean, coming off of a series loss in Alabama and then, you know, going into last night, I mean, you know, the way the game started, I mean, poor Ben Bibee, everything he threw up there got hit hard. And, but credit this team. They're down 7-0. They don't panic at all. And I talked to Nolan Souza after the game about it. And, you know, I've talked to multiple guys about it. And even DVH refers to it all the time. They're calm in the dugout. They're confident. They just feel like they're going to come back and win the game. And, you know, I jokingly say on the air all the time, yeah, we got them right, we want them. But it seemed like last night everything was kind of going the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. You know, all the breaks were going. Everything they hit was finding a hole. We were hitting balls hard right at them. You know, you got the one hopper to Peyton Stovall at second. He makes that play 99 times out of 100. You know, the sinking line drive to Edmondson, right? There were, like, so many things that – didn't go our way early in the game, and then all of a sudden, you know, they find a way to turn it around.
It's when you think about the way Arkansas had hit in Alabama, did not hit well last weekend really at all, maybe outside the first inning of game one, and then you're playing a team, Texas Tech, who's seventh nationally in batting average, or seventh in run scoring, they're eighth in batting average. I mean, this is an elite hitting Texas Tech team. And you're sitting there wondering, are you going to get run rolled on your home field at one point last night? I mean, I think that was a thought that probably crossed a lot of people's mind.
Yeah, I think so. And the thing is, look, Ben wasn't bad last night. Ben was actually making pretty good pitches. I mean, he was throwing changeups down and away, and they were squaring them up 101 miles an hour. You know, he would throw a good slider down, and they'd stay on it. The 0-2 home run he gave up, you know, I want to say the guy fouled off two or three pitches. It was like the sixth pitch with an 0-2 count. That's a slider down and away off the plate. The dude's just, I think McGee was his name, he's just leaning out over the plate, hooks it to left field, gets it up in the wind, hits it 91 miles an hour, but the wind carried it out into the hog pen. And, you know, you're looking, it's like, wow. But he really didn't look bad. Now, he wasn't as sharp as he's been, but it's not like he was throwing balls right over the middle of the plate. They were, just credit their hitters, they were just on him.
I'm a big believer in that good teams respond. Mm-hmm. And there were two responses within last night's game. There was the response to the 7-0 deficit, Texas Tech, and then even the solo home run that they hit in the seventh to go back up 8-7. I think it would be easy to have exerted all your energy on this comeback, and then an inning and a half later, yeah, they hit a home run, and it just pops the balloon. So there's the response within the game on a couple of different occasions, but then there's also the response from Alabama and not playing well at Alabama the last couple of games, offensively especially. And I don't know, it's I think that's what championship teams do, is they find a way to respond to, you know, when things aren't going well for them. And I thought that was a big maybe it showed me something about Arkansas last night.
I agree. I think it was huge. Okay, so let's say we lose that game. You know, we're a three-game losing streak. you never know where things can go from there. And then we still got to go out and play them again tonight. And they are a good hitting team. Anything can happen. It could start a tailspin. And you don't want to see that. But I think the fact that they battled back, I mean, it was a long game. I don't know. I feel really good about going to the ballpark today. But I just think it showed a lot about the team, the fight in this team. They don't give up. And then when they had to, they made a big play. When they needed that big hit, they got the big hit. And then, more importantly, we took advantage of a couple of mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the third baseman. That's a tough play. Ball made a bad hop on it. But then the pitcher, comebacker, you know, we saw that last week in Alabama. You know, the game just sped up on him, and he kind of panicked and didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Should have been a routine double play, really. And as a result, you know, it's an error, and he doesn't get a single out. But the thing about this team, I'll tell you, Phil pointed out something last night on the broadcast that's incredible to me. At home, Texas Tech hits 364. On the road, they hit 267.
The wind doesn't blow out 50 miles an hour on the road.
But I have never seen a split that big. Yeah. That's incredible. Now, I've seen splits where Razorbacks hit better at home. Mm-hmm. Most teams hit better at their home ballpark. It's just we're creatures of habit. But to see a split that big is something I don't know that I've ever seen one like that.
You know, I was talking to I think it was Joe Healy from D1 Baseball several, maybe even back in the, or maybe it was somebody over at D1. It was either Joe Healy or Aaron Fitt, but they made a point. They said, you know, Mason Molina, his stats at Texas Tech, imagine if he played his home games in a different ballpark.
Oh yeah,
because it's such an offensive driven park. I mean, you got the wind that blows out there at all times of the day. And so it does inflate. I mean, look at Hudson White this year. Now, he's facing better pitching in the SEC than he saw in the Big 12, but his offensive numbers aren't anywhere near what he was doing at Texas Tech last season. So I think there's something about their ballpark that, you know, is really a true home field advantage for them from an offensive perspective.
Well, what's even more incredible, think of Mason Molina. He's a fly ball pitcher. Yeah, he throws a high carry fastball at the top of the zone. You make a mistake with that, just 1 inch, and that's the difference in a pop-up, actually not even an inch, an eighth of an inch, mm-hmm. difference in a pop-up and a home run when you're playing in windy conditions like that. So I think what Molina was able to do last year is incredible.
Yeah, wind was blowing about 25 miles an hour last night. I had this thought, you know, Texas Tech players, hey, a nice breeze coming through the ballpark.
I said it. I said, you know what, I think they feel right at home with that wind blowing in like that. Of course, it was blowing in. It usually blows out where mm-hmm. they play, But I don't know. You look at some of the balls hit last night. You look at Jason Jones. He hit that ball 111 to center field. Mm-hmm. Any other day, that's a home run.
Sousa may have hit a grand slam any other day on the sack. Yeah. I mean, when it came off the bat, I think I said, hey, that may be a grand slam. And then Wynn knocked it down. But
as soon as he hit it, I'm like, he's got it. Yeah. Because, you know, I saw it go up, and I glanced at TrackMan. It's 99 off the bat at that trajectory, and, boy, it just went up there and died. But you're right. Any mm-hmm. other day, that probably hit DVH's office.
There were two – you and I were walking out of the stadium last night, I don't know, midnight, somewhere in there, and we were talking about two plays that really stood out to us. One that stood out to me, second inning, Texas Tech scored 6 runs, but they could have scored a 7th if not for Jared Spragelot going home – for a force out on a little low hopper to him at third base. And then in the 9th inning, after Wilmsmeyer had come in as a pinch runner in the 8th, he's in center field as a defensive replacement in the 9th, and he runs down a ball that Peyton Holt, no offense to Peyton Holt, who I love, and we're going to talk about him here in just a minute, but he's not making that play in center field.
Right.
That's probably an RBI double that gives Texas Tech a lead if Wilmsmeyer isn't in the 9th inning in center field.
Yeah, you're right. No, I don't think very many SEC outfielders catch that ball. And he made it look easy. I mean, from the start, as soon as it was hit, I thought that's a double in the gap for sure. The Jared Spragelot play in the second inning, you're right. It's crazy, but, you know, one play can change a game. And, you know, we talked about it on the way out last night, how when you're a third baseman, I teach my third baseman, you have to – everything's predetermined. Mm-hmm. It's like the base running mistake Jared Spragelot made at Alabama with 2 outs. Mm-hmm. You got to score on that ball.
Yeah.
Base hit to left, you got to score. It's predetermined. When that ball's hit, you're going. You got a 2 out lead, you're going on contact. When you're playing third base right there, without getting to all the details of it, but there's so many things you got to know in that situation. If a ball takes me to my left, I'm going to second. If a ball takes me to my right, I'm going to touch the bag and throw across the infield. If it's a high chopper, I got to catch it and throw it at first. That's my only out. If a ball takes me in, which that one did, I mm-hmm. go home. And there's so many things, and it's split second. And he came and got it. It wasn't hit hard, 70, 60-something miles an hour off the bat. But he came and got fielded it and made a perfect throw home. And you're right, that's a huge play in the game.
Because there's got to be a temptation there for him that there's one out. Hey, I can turn and make a double play here. But with the way his momentum was taking him toward the plate, if he turns around and tries to throw to second base, that ball could very easily end up in right field.
Yep, it'll end up in right field because that ball's going to sail on you. It's just a tough play. Can't remember who was running. The DH was running. I think the DH hit the ball, but he runs okay. I want to say it was him. But anyway, at any rate, the best bet is to take your out at the plate right there. Mm-hmm. And he made the right choice.
DH was Basil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the play right there. By the way, we thought it was Basil, like David Basil and Basil.
they came in the booth to make sure we got the pronunciation right.
Different way of pronouncing it. So Arkansas and Texas Tech play this afternoon. 4 o'clock is going to be the first pitch over at Baumwalker Stadium. Ought to be a beautiful day for baseball. I think the high temperature day is supposed to be about 85 degrees. It's going to feel like real baseball weather when they play. Arkansas is going to throw Colin Fisher this afternoon. He's been great, left-handed freshman out of Oklahoma. You just kind of know what you're going to get with Colin Fisher. It's just consistent. It may be 3 innings, maybe 4, maybe 5, but it doesn't walk a lot of batters, doesn't give up a whole lot of hits. I think he's got about a 1.09 whip going into this game. And then Texas Tech's going to throw a right-hander today. Let me pull up his name right here, Hudson Parker. And we were looking up his stats a little bit earlier, and it's kind of like Texas Tech's bullpen across the board. It's not terrible, but it's not real impressive either, the numbers. And he's got a whip over 2, which is something that really stands out to me.
Well, I think, what did I say? He's got 6 innings. He's hit like 9 batters, mm-hmm. or he's walked 9 batters, hit 4, I want to say.
A lot of free passes.
You know, I think lefties are hitting 200 against him. Righties are hitting over 300. So, you know, that says he's probably got a pretty good changeup. Most guys that are, with those splits, that means he's got a pretty good changeup. He can throw to lefties. But, but the problem is for him is getting it across the plate. That's not really good. There's effectively wild, and then there's wild. And I think this guy looks, just stat sheet-wise, looks wild.
Before we move to Alabama, I was looking at something yesterday. You played against Tim Tadlock in college.
Yeah.
What do you remember about him? He was a shortstop at Tech.
Yeah, okay. So I talked to him yesterday, and I talk to him every year when he comes in, and he always tells me the same story. He's like, hey, I remember you. He said, I shifted on you before a shift was a shift. And he said he used to slide over deep when I would come up. And he said he was just telling some of his coaches about George Colefield. Mm-hmm. He said right before I came over and started talking to him. So he's a good guy. Known him for a long time. I really like him. Classy guy. I think he does a good job with the team. Does a good job recruiting. And he's always got hitters, which I like. I like a team that knows how to hit and has a good approach. But I really enjoy talking to him.
He is a character.
He is. And he's an old school guy. And I feel like that old school mentality is starting. There's fewer and fewer. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're dying breed.
I went back and found something yesterday when Arkansas played Tech in 19 at the College World Series. I actually interviewed Tadlock and Dave Van Horn about they started as junior college coaches mm-hmm. in Texas around the same time. Now, their teams never played against each other, but they would cross paths on the recruiting trail. It's just a great story. I mean, Van Horn would talk about you buy your own mower and you cut the grass. And Tadlock said that he raised his kids for a while in one of the dorms on the campus of the junior college until his wife said, we've had enough of this, we're moving. So it's a great story that I tweeted out yesterday. It's interesting to look at the backgrounds of these coaches.
Yeah.
And I think it probably gives you some insight into how much they appreciate what they have now because of the jobs where they came from.
That's what people don't get. They're not just given these jobs. These jobs were earned. I mean, look at DVH. Look at all of his stops and Karen and the family. Everywhere they went with him. I think it's awesome. And then Tim Tadlock's another one. You can look at multiple coaches right now that are successful in high level programs, and you look at where they came from. And I think it's. I look at today. Everybody wants. I want to start here. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. You start down here and you work your way up. And, that's why those guys are so good at what they do. They started at the ground floor, and so they know what it's like to be at every level, and I think that makes them better once they get to the level they're at.
There's a drive there. In that story that I wrote, you know, Rob Childress is also part of this because he was Van Horn's assistant coach in Texarkana. They talk about Dave and Karen Van Horn took him to the Catfish King restaurant for his interview to be an assistant coach at Texarkana College, and probably they were able to pay him next to nothing. But it's interesting just to see the backgrounds of all these different coaches who get into these prominent jobs. Let's look back at Alabama. Arkansas loses the series 2-1. It's their first series loss of the year. They win Friday night, dominant outing by Hagan Smith. Pitching was not bad, especially not starting pitching, during the series against Alabama. Mason Molina had a pretty good outing. Brady Tigert had a pretty good outing, and we'll talk about their outings a little bit later. But they just don't get the big hit in Game 2, and I thought that was really the key to the series, Game 3 notwithstanding. They just couldn't get that big hit, you know, consistently enough in Game 2. They lose that one 4-3 in extra innings when Jake Faraday has a throwing error. And then on Sunday, it seems like there's always one game a year where there's a left-hander who you look at his numbers and you say, you ought to do damage against this guy. And then he just shuts you down. I think about Louisiana Tech in 2021. They had a lefty, I believe, on the Sunday game that year and just shut Arkansas down. I think it was like a two-hit shutout or something. It just seems like there's always that one game a year where a left-hander comes out of nowhere to really shove.
You're right. And, you know, you look at when I saw the pitching matchup, we're playing a tournament this past weekend. So, you know, I'm following you and I'm listening to Phil. And as soon as I saw the pitcher was announced, Zane Adams, I go and I look at his numbers. I'm like, yes. We got the series.
It's like a whip close to 2, an ERA over 8. I mean,
there's certain things I look at
freshman?
When I go in and I look, and there's little telltale signs that, wow, it's going to be a good day to be a Razorback hitter. And I looked at him, I'm like, yeah, we got this. And then I'm listening to the game, and I'm like, okay, yeah, we're going to get on. Now we've seen him once, now we'll get on him, okay? Now we've seen him twice. Oh, this is our time. And it just never materialized. And he really, nothing special other than he pitched, Matt. He just pitched. He got ahead and was able to land some secondary pitches. He didn't pattern. He just pitched, I guess, and that's the best way to describe it. And if you're a lefty that works ahead and throws a few good pitches, you can do what he did.
One of the keys I thought in that game was that Arkansas, they had 6 first pitch outs.
Yeah.
Didn't drive his pitch count up at all, and that was a problem early last night against Texas Tech, too. Their left-hander who started, I think he was at 33 pitches through 3 innings. That's been the key to Arkansas offensively, and, I mean, you can say what you want about their offense. It's struggling, obviously, this year. Last night, I think, toward the end of the game, showed that there is a lot of potential there in the lineup. But when they have been successful this year, it's been because they're driving the pitch count up. They're taking walks. You know, they're forcing a guy to hit batters. They weren't doing that against Alabama. And I don't know, it's almost like they got outside of their approach a little bit, and then they never really could find it mid-game.
I think you're right. We've done such a great job of starting pitching, getting their pitch count up, working counts. Now, I don't know what their approach was. I didn't talk to Nate about it yesterday. I really like to talk to Nate, like especially when we're at home. I'm like, you know, what'd you see on this guy? What are y'all thinking going in? Mm-hmm. And Nate's awesome. Nate Thompson will give me a really good insight, you know, into kind of what the approach is going in. I don't know what their approach was against this guy, and usually I can watch the game and kind of say, okay, this is what we're trying to do. Honestly, I couldn't figure it out, and I'm not knocking the guys or anything. I couldn't figure out what we were trying to do against them. We were swinging at some breaking balls early. We were swinging it's what I call being caught in between. I talk about it all the time. We were early on off speed, but then we were late on fastballs, and so couldn't figure out what we were really trying to do with him. But you're right, we made too many outs early in the count, and that allowed him to go longer. I think if we get him out of there, which who would have ever thought he'd have gone 8 innings against us? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think they were expecting 3 or 4 maybe. But you know, that's life on the road in the SEC. You just never know when you're going to run up against that one guy that's having a good day.
It's in here to adjust my hat. I just realized I was wearing like Gomer Pyle at the start of the show.
Yeah, you are kind of. You got a little Gomer in you. I didn't want to say anything, but I mean, you still look good, though.
It's the Bob Jones look. My grandpa, he would wear his like that. When you lose a series, I feel like it gets your attention way more than if you're winning and you're not looking good. You know, it's like they've had – I mean, they've had some series this year. What was it? Ole Miss? I don't know. One of these series they've had recently, we talked about it, every game could have gone the other way.
Right.
Auburn, maybe that was the series I'm thinking about. But, you win a couple of one-run games and you're feeling pretty good about yourself. I feel like it gets your attention more when you lose than it does when you're winning, because then all of a sudden it's like, hey, this is all the stuff we've been talking to you about, but now it's starting to affect you on the field.
Yeah. Well, and you look at some of the plays we didn't make against Alabama and plays that we typically make. You know what I mean? There were a few, not routine plays, but just plays that I feel like that we typically make as a Razorback team. And I think it came back, some of them, they don't go as errors, but they're plays that we typically make. And I think, some of the at-bats, you go back and look at some of the at-bats, they weren't quality at-bats. And I think those start to add up over the course of a game. But you're right. I think it can be a good awakening. And I think last night was. I honestly think coming out last night and getting punched like that early in the game, mm-hmm. I think is really good for our guys. Now, I hate it for Ben Bibee, because I love Ben Bibee. I do. I love talking to that guy.
And he's been so good for him.
He's been so good. And I fell for him because, like I said, I think it was just a really good approach against them. But he didn't have an answer. He mm-hmm. couldn't stop it. And they just kept hitting the ball. And even the ones they didn't hit hard found a hole. You know, he made a couple of good changeups. They hit off the end of the bat. So I don't know. It's I think it's good though. I really do. I think it can be a wake up call. But I think the first inning last night, second inning was a wake up call for us. I think that's good to get smacked around a little bit, see how you respond.
And that can happen to good pitchers. As that was happening last night, I kept having these flashbacks to what TCU was doing to Hagan Smith in the regional last year. Sometimes when they've got your number, they got your number, and there's just nothing you can do about it. How do you fix Arkansas's offensive struggles right now? And I want to preface that with Rob Vaughn, the Alabama coach. He was so complimentary of Arkansas defensively and talked about that defense takes away so many runs during the course of a game. And that's something you can't really gauge how many runs are taken away during the course of a game. You look at a guy like Ty Wilmsmeyer, not hitting the ball well, but what does he do in center field that saves runs for him? I mean, we talked about the run that he saved against Texas Tech last night. And so it's this balance. I feel like they've got one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the SEC.
Right.
They're fielding 981 overall. It's closer to 990 in SEC play. How do you balance wanting to be really good defensively with knowing that you need to have more production at the plate?
Well, it's tough. And I want to go back and say some of the errors that we have are kind of fluke errors.
Yeah.
I think Faraday's a fluke thing. I think there's been a couple of those. I think Jared Sprague-Glide had a couple of tough errors early on at Globe Life Field.
Mm-hmm. He got one last night, too, that I did not feel like was his error. It was Ben McLaughlin.
Yeah, that wasn't his error. That ball wasn't in the dirt. Now, it's a tough play. Ben's going to catch that every time. But as far as balancing it out, I always talk about money ball. You want to know, okay, so – how does this guy benefit me more? Is he going to save me more runs on defense, mm-hmm. or am I better off sacrificing maybe that one ball in the gap that this other guy is going to catch for three or four more hits? And that's kind of the tough balance that mm-hmm. you kind of deal with. And honestly, looking at the lineup last night, I've said it all year. You've heard me talk about it. I'm in the Peyton Holt fan club. There's a lot of talent on that team, but I loved seeing Peyton Holt in the leadoff spot. Now, will it carry over to the weekend? I don't know, Matt, but now he's not a prototypical leadoff guy because Phil said something last night. He swung at like 7 first pitches in a row going back to the Alabama game, and he swung at 3 first pitches last night. Mm-hmm. But he gets a good pitch and puts a good swing on it. And if it's not a good pitch, he doesn't swing. He doesn't chase a lot early in the count. I think you just need – it's that balance to where hitting is contagious, but so's not hitting. And, I mean, I know I'm a glass-half-full guy. This team is going to score runs. All right, I'm a glass three-quarters full, all right? And I do have Razorback
goggles.
You were
happy we didn't come in here with a 3-game losing streak to talk about today.
What was the first thing you and I talked about last night leaving the stadium?
Thank God they won, that we've got something positive to talk about. Yeah.
But baseball's a funny game. You can mm-hmm. sit there and watch a game. Like I could watch, let's pick out game 3 of Razorback series Sunday. against Alabama, and you can pick out all the positives or you can pick out all the negatives. Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of negatives you could pick out. There really were. At bats, defense, and all that, or you can look at all the positives. And I tell you what, when Peyton Holt made that play in the first inning Sunday, mm-hmm. against a great catch against the wall, doubles a guy off first, once again, I'm like, yes, there we go. We forgot about the day before. That's a tough loss. Mm-hmm. Saturday was a tough loss. That's a tough way to lose. I'd rather the guy have just hit a bomb and walked it off than to lose the way we did. But once Peyton made that play, I'm like, all right, we forgot about that. The momentum's our way. We're going to win this game. And, like I said, it just didn't happen.
Even within that game, too, loss against Alabama, I was impressed with the way they responded. I mean, you had the home run by Holt, number one, in the ninth inning that ties the game with two outs. You have the catch by Kendall Diggs, which may be the best defensive play of the year, on the warning track, just lays out, knows he has to give up his body, and he's hurting, and we're going to talk about that a little bit here in a minute, but, you know, makes a great play. Even Aloy, the shortstop, the play he made at short to spin and turn and throw that ball to save the run at the end of the ninth, that was a big play, and then you lose on a fluke play. I mean, you give up a double to start the 10th. It is what it is. Holt, that guy's a gamer. I love him. I love watching him play, the enthusiasm that he has. You know, I love the fact that I know if he's going for a double, the helmet's going to fly off halfway between first and second. He's just a fun guy to watch. And, you know, you talked about the play in left field. There was the home run. They're just, I don't know, there's something about him that just seems to really ignite this team. We saw it at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And maybe we're seeing that a little bit again this year. I mean, he had a big hit during the big six-run inning against Tech last night that was, you know, key to that.
Yeah, here's what I like about Peyton Holt. So from the booth, I can see down in the dugout, and you can tell body language. You can tell who the guys are that aren't happy that they're not playing. Mm-hmm. Peyton Holt, when he's not in the lineup, when someone scores, he is the first guy to congratulate him. When someone makes a good play on defense, he's the first guy at the top of the steps, whether he's in the lineup or not. And that's the guy. I want nine of those guys on my team. You give me nine of those guys, we're winning a whole lot of games, Matt. And he's just that guy. But when he's in the game, it just the ball finds him, does mm-hmm. it not? It seems like wherever he's at, the ball finds him. And when he's in the game, he's always up at the plate in the right situation. And I don't know if you noticed him last night when they were making their pitching change or they were talking. Did you see him pacing around the on-deck circle?
Mm-hmm.
He was pacing around. I mean, he looked like a caged animal. I mean, and I would have bet anything that he was going to come up and come through in that situation.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the guy threw him a really good slider, and he chased it down out of the zone. I'll take him in that situation every time. Every time. He's going to succeed.
Is there such a thing as a clutch gene? Because Holt, when you watch him in practice, he's not a bad practice player, but there's something about when the lights come on that he is a better game player, I think, than he is a practice player. And then, obviously, I mean, we've seen it time and again, whether it be the two-out home run against Alabama or maybe the RBI single last night on the first pitch after Texas Tech makes the pitching change. It just seems like, you know, once most games, there's going to be a play that Peyton makes that you're going to look back on and say, that was a really big play that was key to the game.
Yeah, I think there is. So some guys have the ability to slow the game down.
Mm.
And I, part of being clutch is not getting too in the moment. Like I say, he was like a caged animal. You know, that was him wanting to get up to the plate. That's not him nervous. That's him wanting to be the man in that spot. And then, well, they're still out there. He walks up in the on-deck circle or by the plate, and he's still just kind of pacing around.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell he wanted to be the man in that situation. There's a lot to say to that. I mean, but when you step up there, then you slow it all down. The guy threw him a first pitch slider and he laid off of it. And that told me right there, the emotions are under control. But yeah, there's something to be said about that. Some guys have a knack for that and some guys don't. Some guys get in that situation, the game speeds up on them. I'm not going to throw any names under anyone under the bus. We had a player like that last year come up in that same situation. They'll swing three sliders in the dirt and go back to the dugout banging his bat on the ground.
Mm.
You know, you got to be able to slow the game down. And it starts right here. They talk about how mental the game of baseball is. But I think there's definitely that clutch gene. We call it – there's some guys that can go out for BP. Like Peyton Holt, he takes a pretty good BP. He didn't take a great BP. But when the game comes on, I mean, when the lights come on, You know, he gets it done. We call that guy the 5 o'clock cowboy that goes out at 5 o'clock and just hit nukes all over the field. The game starts, can't hit anything.
What's the noise he makes when he gets in?
Peyton?
Yeah.
He's got that. He's got that little thing in him that just, it's not on a stat sheet, but boy, you can see it. And I love it.
We got to put that in the dictionary. All right. We're just getting started here on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. We got questions coming up here in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsor.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Usually, if you're watching us live, you see us with a bobblehead here. I guess Bubba has run out of bobbleheads this week, but you have brought – it looks kind of like the Sword and the Stone baseball version.
Yeah, it's heavy. And I tell you what, it says on it, sometimes you just have to play hardball. And after last night's game, I thought this was appropriate because that's what we had to play last night. We had to, you know, we've had a lot of games where the pitching has won it. Last night we had to slug. You know, we're trying to figure out the identity of this team. Are we a team that can go out and play pitching and defense, or a team that's got to go out and bang the ball? Last night we had to go out and bang the ball to get the win. And so I thought it was appropriate for today. My mom got it for me a long time ago, and it sits on one of my shelves. And so, yeah, I brought it in.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. We got questions. We've asked for questions this week from our message board at wholehogsports.com. Also put out a little all call this morning for questions from Twitter. Got a couple of those. And Blake Sutton, our producer, is going to give us going to read those to us. Go ahead, Blake.
All right. First one is from Rick B. in Barling, Arkansas. Never heard of Barling.
Barling, right by Fort Smith.
Okay.
Fort Smith, Northside School District right there.
Okay, cool. I was wondering where that was. Can you please give us an update on Kendall Diggs? I think they talked about it on the broadcast, but I was at the game watching, did not hear the update.
So Kendall Diggs has got a little bit of a shoulder injury. It's to his non-throwing shoulder, so it would be his left shoulder. He throws right-handed, hits left-handed. We think this goes back to the McNeese State Series. There was a play early in game one against McNeese where he slid into second base and came up real awkwardly, and we think that's where this stems from, that he's been playing through that for several weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I don't know if it's a curse or not. I like to see those little things that happen, and you know your player's body language. I remember him sliding in, and he got up, and he was holding his arm, and he was doing this, and I want to say I said something to Phil. I said, boy, I hope he didn't hurt his arm. Mm-hmm. But you could see he was trying to move it, and I've done that before. I've jammed my shoulder sliding in to a base, and it's not good. I've tore a ligament sliding in head first. Mm-hmm. You just tell something's wrong, and I don't think he said anything to the staff, and I think he's just been trying to play through it, and I think it finally got to the point where, you know, he had to do something about it. And so nothing serious. It's just it's just part of playing baseball. You just get banged up. And, you know, when the more you try to play through it, you kind of make it worse sometimes. So he's going to be fine, though.
They think he'll play against South Carolina this weekend. Not going to play today against Texas Tech. Said he's got some swelling. They've given him some anti-inflammatories. And they think he'll be ready to practice Thursday night.
All right, next question is from Dylan in Bentonville. Is there a chance Jason Jones could crack the lineup for SEC play this weekend?
I mean, I would not be surprised if you see him as a DH against a left-handed pitcher or a pinch hitter against he reminds me of Aloy in the fact that whenever he gets ready to swing, he's going to give it his all. You mentioned the 111-mile-an-hour off the center field wall double. The eighth-inning double that he had was 113 miles an hour off the bat. I mean, this guy can really smoke it. And it seems like when he's gotten his chances in the midweek here the last couple of weeks, he's really performed pretty well.
You know, he has. And, okay, so I brag on Peyton Holt all the time. He's another one that's got an unbelievable attitude. I love the kid. I love talking to him. He's always in a good mood. Now, it's easy to say, you know, you're playing baseball for University of Arkansas. How can you not be in a good mood? You know, but every day he goes out and he works. And I know, you know, him and Nate Thompson, they've been working a little bit on his swing. They've made a few tweaks here and there. And I think he really likes it, and I think you're starting to see the difference. Like in BP, I mean, he's always hit the ball hard, but boy, he is hammering balls in BP. It takes a little bit of time to get that BP swing into the game. So I tell you, he's special, man. When he hits it, there's a few guys on the team that have that special sound off their bat. He's one of them, and I hope he gets a chance. I know he works hard. He works hard on his defense. He's gotten way better out in left field. But when he hits the ball, he hits it hard, and he's definitely a force in the lineup. So to answer the question, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in there, you know, against a lefty on the weekend.
Jason was such a big recruit out of high school down in North Texas that it's easy to give up on a player like that. And I'm talking about not as a coach, but as, you know, maybe a casual observer, you know, and say, hey, you know, he just didn't live up to the rankings. But sometimes it takes a little while for those guys to act. It's like it takes different players different amounts of times to acclimate to new levels of sports, whatever it is, baseball, basketball, football. And even Peyton Stovall, he didn't, you know, he wasn't playing up to the level that I think people thought he would. Chad Spanberger is one who I think about the first 2 years is like, you know, what is this guy? And then the last year, boom, that's what they were talking about. I think you might see that from Jones maybe, you know, toward the end of this year and certainly next year.
Well, Andrew Benintendi, remember his freshman year?
Yeah, he had the broken bone in his hand that affected him.
But. Yeah, I mean, he struggled, you know, stayed home that off season, worked on his swing. But, yeah, it takes guys a long time, especially guys that, you know, Jason Jones probably never struggled in his life. Peyton Stovall probably never struggled. You come to this level, and it's baseball's such a mental game. You struggle a little bit. It can affect you a little bit, and then you start doubting your mechanics. You know, you start doubting yourself, and then it can snowball from there. But I think I still say, you know, he's a guy that's going to be special. And, you know, I interviewed him early on, you know, post game, and I said, look, when I think of a major league outfielder, it's you. That's what I told him. I said that's you look like a big league outfielder to me. He hits the ball like a big league outfielder. It's a matter of just taking all that into the game, and you know, it's easier said than done sometimes. But I think he's really starting to make a step forward. His at bats are getting better, and that's what you want to see.
It's all, you know, it's all based on matchups. But like, I feel like Souza is their left-handed DH. That much is pretty clear. But their right-handed DH has kind of been something that they've been looking to figure out. Like, who's this Wagner? You know, he'll come in, he'll have a good game. I thought he hit pretty well last night. But Jones, with the way he's hitting, it wouldn't surprise me if he was able to get in as a DH as their right-handed.
Right. Yeah, Wagner, like you said, Wagner's another one, though. Just puts together professional bats. Here's the thing. We need another team. There's so many guys.
You're like back in the 60s, they had the Schoats, the freshman football team. They need, like these guys can go out and play on, you know, Mondays and Thursdays.
Like a JV squad or something. I don't know.
All right, Blake.
All right, next one's from Army Hog. Do you have an update on Hunter Dietz?
I do. Hunter Dietz had an MRI and an X-ray last week. They're pleased, I guess, with the results of both of those tests. We don't know exactly where it is that he's hurting, and I don't want to speculate on that. We know that it's not the elbow, that it's not related to the elbow surgery that he had. At least that's what Dave Van Horn said last week when he left the game early against San Jose State. Probably not going to pitch this week. May not pitch next week, but they're hoping that they've got him back and able to go again within a couple of weeks.
You know, you take a guy like that, he's got so much upside, there's no need to rush him. You know, we've got enough depth right now. They need to make sure he's right and then bring him back, and he's going to be fine, whether it's, you know, in a week or two or whenever. I mean, I don't think there's any need to rush a guy like that because he's going to be a big part of this team down the road, whether it's ends up materializing this year or next. At some point, he's going to be he's a dude. He's going to be there.
He's probably your Friday night starter within a year or two.
Yeah, I think so. Likely. I mean, you picture, just think of him and Geichel.
It's like the new generation of Hagen Smith and Brady Tykert. Yeah, although I think that Dietz and Geichel, at least what we saw in the offseason, they may have been better when they came in than Smith and Tykert were, at least at that level, or at least at that age, Blake.
All right, last one is from podcast superstar Uta Man. I think he's had a question on every episode this year. What is a normal day like for the players? What time do they get down to the field? What time do they leave, et cetera? And how do they get their classwork when they go on the road?
Oh, how about that? So I know that they typically show up to the field about 4 hours before game time, and I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, they get there early. They have their team meal. Then they go over the scouting report for that day. Pitchers go do their things. The hitters go over the scouting report. And I'll tell you, since they moved it up, I used to sit in on the scouting report, Matt. And honestly, out of everything that I did, that was my favorite part of the day, is sitting in on the scouting report, watching the video of that day's pitcher and kind of the attack, how their plan of attack against the guy. It was awesome. I loved it. It reminded me of back in the day, you know, with the Rockies or the Yankees, sitting there watching, okay, this is Kerry Wood. This is what he throws. This is how he patterns. You watch how he pitches other guys. They spend some time doing that. Some guys will go from there and do, like, individual work. They kind of have an hour after that before stretch to kind of do a little bit of individual work. If they want extra swings, whatever they need to do to get their mind right, then they take the field. You know, if it's like last night, a 7 o'clock game, they're out there at 4:30 stretching. BP at 4:45, or they'll take a few ground balls, do some ground ball work. BP starts at 4:45. They hit for an hour. They go back to the clubhouse. They come back out, take infield, and get ready to strap it on for a game. But, you know, there's so much that goes through it. You know, pitchers after the game, you know, like a reliever, like I was talking to a Dylan Carter after the game, you know, when everyone else is leaving, you know, Dylan's down there doing his band work and doing some, you know, just a little bit of simple, you know, body work, stuff like that to get the, you know, kind of work the kinks out, get the blood flow going in after throwing, stuff like that. And so it's a long day. People don't realize all the work that these guys put in. They, you know, the fans show up at 7 and watch the game, but these guys have been there, like you said, 4 or 5 hours before the game, getting prepared for what the fans get to see on the field. And it's really neat to see how much work they put in. And look, just not the players, the staff. I know guys like Zach Barr is unbelievable. Zach's probably the first one there, probably the last one to leave. But that's why when you see a ball hit in a hole and we have a guy standing there, that's Zach Barr. That's his advanced scouting. So the coaching staff does a great job of getting there and putting in their time. So it's awesome.
All right, well, we appreciate your questions. Hope you'll continue to send those in as we go along throughout the year. Let's talk about the SEC race. Arkansas was in a good spot, and they're not in a bad spot right now. Kentucky is a team that mystifies me because I keep waiting on Kentucky to stump its toe, and it just doesn't happen. And not only are they not losing, but, I mean, they're beating up teams really bad, and they're 14-1 going into this weekend. Now, I think that their schedule is backloaded. I think they play tougher teams the final 5 weeks collectively than they did the first five. And it starts this weekend. Now, it's on their home field, but they've got Tennessee coming in.
You know, I'm like you. Every week I keep thinking, okay, this is the week that it's going to end. And they just keep going out, and they're not just winning. I mean, they're pounding people. I mean, and their pitching's been good. You know, sometimes they'll – you know, you'll see Kentucky get off to a hot start, and then they'll just kind of fizzle out. Well, I'm waiting for that fizzle to happen, and it's not happening. And so I guess they're really good. I mean, I've looked at their offensive numbers, and they're crazy, mm-hmm. their offensive numbers. And their pitching's pretty good, too. They're not mm-hmm. They've got some guys that can throw it.
Under Mangione, they've always been a team that can hit. It's been the pitching that's kind of been their undoing.
No, it has. And this year, I want to say they're second behind us in runs allowed. I've got the stats somewhere. ERA, they're second. Razorbacks are first in SEC in ERA, 2.96 ERA, just SEC only. Kentucky's second with 3.27 earned run average. So, I mean, they're right there in the top. And then, you know, hitting, we know they're up there. So, yeah. I don't know if they're going to fall apart or not.
So they're 14-1. A&M is in second place with a 13-2 record. They were really impressive, I thought, last week, putting it on Vanderbilt three times down at Bluebell.
Yeah, they are. Now, A&M's the team. They're the ones that worries me. We play there later in the year. I wish we had them here. I would feel way better, but I've got a chance to watch them play a few times, and they're good. They've got arms. They've got bats up and down the lineup. Mm-hmm. They're a big, strong, physical team. They got power arms. They're the real deal.
Interesting dynamic with them. You know, they're number one now in all the polls. Arkansas fell to number two. They go to Alabama this week. So Alabama's going to have back-to-back number one teams on their field where they play a pretty good brand of baseball. They're a totally different team on their home field than they are away from home. They're 0-6 away from home, but at home they've beaten Arkansas and Tennessee and South Carolina.
Yeah, I tell you, other than the – I mean, the Kentucky series is going to be fun, but I'm really watching that because I want to see how Alabama does against A&M in their home ballpark because mm-hmm. – Well, you know, you look, Alabama got beat last night by, someone beat them 5-2. I don't even know who they got beat by, but.
Was it UAB, I think?
Yeah, it was UAB. And how do they only score 2 runs? The offense that we saw over the weekend, how do they only score 2 runs? I mean, maybe they played some non-starters. I don't know, but I was really impressed with Alabama's offense. I thought top to bottom, they put together good at-bats. So we'll see. We'll see how they do against A&M's pitching. I think that's going to be a fun series to keep up with.
I gave A&M's SEC record wrong. They're 11-4. Arkansas's 12-3. So Arkansas's actually got a 1-game lead on them in the division. A&M's got a better overall record than Arkansas. After that, it really falls off in the West. Yeah. Mississippi State 7-8. Alabama 6-9. Ole Miss is 5-10. LSU 3-12. Auburn, who I think is a good team, they just keep playing top 10 teams week after week after week. They're 2-13. Right now in the SEC, kind of a similar thing in the East. You got Kentucky at 14-1, Tennessee at 10-5, and there's a little bit of a drop off. Vanderbilt and South Carolina both tied at 8-7. Arkansas goes to South Carolina this week. Did you see the Mike Bianco video the other night against Mississippi State? Okay. I wanted them to keep the mic open. I wanted open mic, and I wanted to hear that argument between he and Scott Klein.
You heard part of it. So was that Carl Ravitch on the call?
That was Tom Hart and Kyle Peterson. Oh, Kyle's in town here for this game, and then Ravitch is in town here for Arkansas.
Okay. Well, I got a chance to talk to Kyle for a second last night, but I wanted to bring that up to him because it was so funny how they played that off. They're like because the hot mic caught what Mike Bianco was really thinking.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, you can clearly see that Mike Bianco or hear that Mike Bianco's visibly upset about that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the words that came across the mic.
Yeah, you could hear. He said, that bat landed at my feet, and then it got real good. I think that would make a baseball broadcast better. You got your FCC and all this nonsense, but it'd make a broadcast really fun if you could have – mics on the field, and you could hear what's being said at all times.
I think it'd be awesome.
I'd love it.
Even if you've got to just beep it out.
Yeah.
You know, like my son will watch some stuff on YouTube. It'll be like the best ejections of managers, and it'll beep out. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, do something like that. Of course, you know what they're saying, but I don't know what you thought about the call. I mean, the way I understand the rule, he should have been tossed.
This is the same player from Mississippi State, the catcher who was kneeing the Georgia runner that led to that whole fiasco down in Starkville a couple of weeks ago. The rule is that if you throw the bat at the opposing dugout, it's supposed to be an automatic ejection. So I think Bianco was within his right there.
I think so. I mean, and look, I get it. It's the 12th inning. It's a home run. It's your first home run of the year in the 12th inning. But have a little bit of etiquette. There's Matt, and look, I'm not old fuddy duddy. Let's have fun. Let's celebrate home runs. Let's do it towards your dugout. Don't toss the bat.
That's the whole rule. You throw the bat at your dugout, you're fine. You throw it at the opposing dugout, it's supposed to be an ejection.
I mean, I think he should have been tossed. I think it was a horrible call, and
pissed Ole Miss off.
Yeah,
they came back and won at the bottom of the inning, and then they beat them 14-2 in game 3.
Exactly. Don't poke the bear, right? Don't give the other team – like, I hate a guy that strikes out and then, like, struts towards the batter looking at him. You know, you just don't do that because I've been in the opposing dugout. Actually, I've been the guy that struck out and had the pitcher stare me down on the way back to the dugout. You know what? He didn't strike me out next time. I got him next time. It's that mental edge. It's that little bit of mental, I can go back, and it radiates throughout the dugout. When you get a guy acting a fool on the mound, you're going to get him when you're in that other dugout. And it works both ways. And as far as the tag goes, I never understood that tag that catcher made. I mean, that was, I don't know what he was doing. And you know,
there had to be something. There had to be some sort of beef between them before that play.
Yeah, because that's
all I can, because that or – he just lost his mind.
Yeah, dude, Dude, Psycho, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know.
It was. I've never seen anything like that.
No, that was. That
Look
was
at
crazy.
Us talking about the SEC again. We said we were going to do this this year.
I mean, you know, you almost have to, though. I mean, there's so much stuff. Yeah. Look, the SEC is awesome. I love it. I get so entertained. I hate the SEC website, but I like
it's horrible.
Going on
I'm
there.
Actually sitting here right now trying to navigate between standings and schedule.
Hey, I love Phil Nelson, and he gets so frustrated during games. He actually found a new website. Someone tweeted him last night about a different website. But he's trying to find the scores, and he's awesome at calling a game and, like, finding the scores. And, like, I can ask him some random question. He'll find me the answer. I don't know how he does it. But he gets so frustrated with the SEC website. And, you know, I try to navigate it. Like, this morning I'm trying to go through to jot down a few things, and you just can't find anything on there. I mean, I don't know why they changed it.
Yeah. Right, I don't know.
That's my rant for the day. I'm good now. I guess it's the 4 hours of sleep, right?
Yeah. We're tired, by the way. We still got a baseball game to go here in a little bit. The rotation. We talked about Hagan, and I touched on this a little bit earlier. Hagan is so dominant that it can make good outings by Molina and Tigert the next 2 days look just kind of pedestrian, right? I mean, you know, Hagan not really allowing base runners, a whip under one. And then, you know, Molina and Tigert, they're not that type of pitcher. They're going to work with base runners. Tigert was in the stretch almost the entire time, it felt like, in Tuscaloosa. Molina dealt with base runners too. But the bottom line is not to allow runs. And those two have been really effective at that, you know, for the most part.
Right.
I mean, you take an outing away here and there, but for the most part, they've been really effective at that. And I thought they were really good at that against Alabama. Tigert especially did a great job of pitching around base runners.
Well, and you look at the beginning of the game, he had a hard time landing his breaking ball, so he was able to get him out with a fastball changeup. And that's when you know you're special. I think his breaking ball is the best pitch. You know, he's got two different ones. He's got more of the traditional breaking ball. He's got the sweeper. But think about our starting pitching. 17 innings, 3 runs versus Alabama. On their field. Yep. So if you told me that at the end of a series, I'd be like, all right, we won the series. We might have swept. Mm-hmm. In my mind, if you look at just what you're starting, because your starting pitching is the key. It all starts there. I would have thought we'd have swept or at least won 2 out of 3 because that's incredible what those guys are doing. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Hagan, you know, even Hagan got knocked because he only struck out 6. I'm sorry. If you're an SEC pitcher, a Friday night guy, and you're striking out 1 per inning, mm-hmm. that's pretty good. Yeah. He took a no-hitter into the 6th. Did he not?
He did, yeah.
I mean, he only gave up 2 hits, no runs. I mean, who cares? Are we falling in love with the strikeout too much?
A little bit.
I mean, he's not going to strike out 15 every game.
It's the chase. It's trying to catch Nick Schmidt. I think that's on a lot of people's mind. You know, 345 is the career strikeout record for Schmidt. I think Hagan's somewhere in the 280 range, 290 range right now. I think there's a lot of people who's like, hey, you know, he's got to stay on this 9-10 per game pace to be able to catch that. A lot of people want to see him break that record this year, and he may do it.
But who cares? Do you really care about that? I want to win. I want to win the College World Series.
I think it's baseball is one of those sports. It's like you want to win the games, but then you want to like achieve all these little, you know, milestones. Through. It's like kind of like playing Mario Brothers. You know, like you want to get to level 8, but you know you want to. it's been a long time since I played the NES, but
okay.
No
here's
sleep.
Here's what this. You know the streaks that I like.
What's that?
I like the winning streak at Baumwalker.
24 games.
24 games. I think that's awesome, and I think the reason I think it's awesome is because I talk about our fans all the time. Look at us last night, a Tuesday night game, and it's, 11 o'clock? And that place is still packed, going crazy. And, look, I think that attributed to the pitcher's meltdown on the mound. That dude was good on the mound. He's,
a 0.044,
yeah, earned run average. But I think the moment got up to him. I think the crowd attributed to that. I mean, I really do. You know, he hit McLaughlin with a 1-2 pitch, wasn't even close. Got the fans yelling at him. He gets the ground ball. He kind of panics, bobbles it. You know, he slips. He pees down his leg. He throws the ball. There's everything that could go wrong in that play went wrong. But I think the fans were awesome. So streaks like that I like. I don't know. Hunting a strikeout or a home run record, stuff like that. As much as I love home runs, I don't even know who the career home run leader is for Arkansas. I don't care. I don't care who the strikeout leader is. I guess, you know, maybe. And I bet if you ask Hagen Smith, you think he cares?
Not if he wins a ring.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I think that's what he's looking for.
Yeah.
So Arkansas goes to South Carolina this week. South Carolina's been really good. Another top 25 team that the Razorbacks are going to play. They just beat Florida, and it seems like everybody's beating Florida right now. That's a team that's really hard to figure out. They come into bomb next week, and I think they're like 19 and 17 after last night. It's very strange to figure out Florida right now. Hard to do, but South Carolina beat them twice last weekend. I believe that game or that series was in Columbia. Had pretty good pitching this year. The thing that stands out to me about South Carolina is that there may not be a better three-headed hitting monster in the SEC than Ethan Petrie, Gavin Cassis, and Cole Messina. Those guys are really, really good.
No, they are. And I went back and looked at what we did with Petrie last year. You realize he was 1-for-11. I knew he struggled.
Oh, Arkansas shut South Carolina down all three games. Hagen pitched well in game one. Game two, they lose 3-1, but that's the one where Tigert and Will McIntyre go 9. And then the last one is on Mother's Day where Hunter Holland throws this great game with his mom, you know, and everything that happened with her. Yeah, they shut them down for three games last year.
I mean, he's 1-for-11 with 7 Ks. Really didn't do anything. But you're right. I mean, those are three good hitters in the lineup. You look at their numbers, though, and it's really hard to, you know, you can look at South Carolina and SEC only. So when we get to about the midpoint of the year, I don't know how you analyze stats. Once we get to about midseason in the SEC, I start looking at SEC stats. Mm-hmm. I don't care what they do against the other chumps. I want to know what they're doing against SEC. And SEC, you know, they're hitting – They're ninth with a .257 batting average. They've scored 96 runs. They're averaging 6.4 runs a game. Razorbacks are averaging, you know, 5.5 runs a game. I mean, you can, you know, but where we really stand out is our pitching. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, we've only allowed 47 runs. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, they've allowed 95. They're eighth. You know, 6.3 runs per game is what they're allowing. Those are kind of the things that I start to look at. And, you know, I guess you can't really do it totally because teams are different at home and on the road. Mm-hmm. South Carolina is another team that's good at home and not as good on the mm-hmm. road. So, you know, all that I just told you was probably I just wasted 2 minutes of your time.
and, you know, like with Arkansas, I think the verdict is out on are they a good road team this year? They're 3-3 in road games. You know, Auburn, like we said, could have gone either way. Alabama could have gone either way. And, you know, probably 3-3 probably is about the right record for the way that they played on the road this year. South Carolina's got some older pitching, right-hander. Now, they haven't announced their rotation for the weekend, but if they keep the same rotation they've had, it'll be right-hander Eli Jones on Friday, right-hander Ty Good on Saturday, and left-hander Matthew Becker on Sunday. All of these guys are sub-4 ERAs. Good has been really good for them, ERA under 2, at least going into the Florida game last week. They can pitch, and it could be a deal kind of like last year where you got three low-scoring games.
I think so. You look at Ty Good's got the best numbers. He's senior, 204 in the SEC. You know, he's they're only opposing batters are hitting 194 against them, 194 in the SEC. So he's but you're right. No, Matthew Becker struggled just a little bit. Their Sunday guy's a lefty. His numbers in the SEC aren't that good. Hitters are hitting 295 against him, but mm-hmm. – You know, you look at Zane Adams. I hate to contaminate the conversation.
Can I say something about Zane Adams real quick? I looked up something on him. He was like the number 205 draft prospect last year by Baseball America, and that's overall. And so if you're talking about just freshmen, you're probably talking about top 75, 90 range among or at least or players out of high school last year, high school seniors. So it's not like this guy just kind of came out of nowhere. It's that I think it's probably that he's starting to pitch up to the level that they thought he would when they recruited him out of the Houston area.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't think about that, but you're probably right. It's by this point in the year, these guys aren't freshmen anymore. Mm-hmm. They've been through fall ball. They're halfway through the SEC. I don't look at them as freshmen. I want to say DVH said something about Souza last night. 60, 70 at bats right now. He's really not a freshman anymore. He's just a good hitter.
Mm-hmm. What's the key to this weekend?
I think we have to hit better. I think we do. I really do. I think we have to put together better at bats than we did against Alabama. I think our defense will be there. I think we made a few miscues. But I think it comes down our pitching. We know what our pitching's going to give us. I mean, we've got a pretty good feel going in what we're going to get out of our pitching staff. I think they'll shut these. I don't want to say shut these guys down, but I think they'll control. You know, they're not going to let a Petrie hurt them. If it comes in a situation, he's not going to be the guy that hurt us. And someone else might. But I think it comes down to us just scoring a few more runs. You know, Phil's amazing. You know, and I'm always bragging on Phil. I love Phil. He put the magic number for us scoring. You know, I always talk about Moneyball all the time. How many runs do we have to score to win?
Mm-hmm.
Phil kind of puts ours at four. If we score four runs, we're gonna win the game. Because of our pitching staff. Now the formula is how do we score four runs? And I look at their staff. Their starters are okay, but you know, you get in that bullpen. I don't see anyone in that bullpen that's really dominant that scares me. But you know, the key is getting those starters out of the game, running up their pitch count, being selective, kind of like we did against Hess on Friday night. I thought our approach against Hess was great. You know, we almost got him out of there in what, third inning. You know, but I think that's the key early on is to get that starter out, get the pitch counts up, get into their bullpen early, and I think the rest of the weekend will just kind of fall into place.
Kind of interesting, the next 2 weeks, you know, Caglione at Florida is who a lot of people think is going to go 1-1 this year in the draft. A lot of people think Petrie may go 1-1 in 2025, either he or Jace Lavallette at Texas A&M. Those are kind of the top two, at least college draft prospects right now. So kind of interesting, you might see back-to-back weekends where you played the first round or the first overall pick in the major league draft in 2 years. That doesn't happen very often.
Right. And Caglione, you know what? I'm looking forward to seeing Caglione. By the way,
can you imagine the buzz in the stadium when Hagen Smith goes out against Jack Caglione in the first inning of that Friday game?
That's going to be fun. I want to say he hit one over 500 feet last night, didn't he?
I was talking to somebody earlier. They said 500 yards. But, yeah, I think it was like 500 feet.
500 yards, 500 feet. Who cares? It went a long way.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he can certainly mash the baseball. All right, Arkansas and South Carolina this weekend. It's going to be in Columbia. Also, Arkansas, Texas Tech this afternoon. If you're watching us live or you hear this before the 4 o'clock first pitch, that game is going to be on SEC Network this afternoon. Arkansas and South Carolina three times, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Hope you come to wholehogsports.com to read all of our coverage from Texas Tech, from South Carolina, or you can go to you can listen to Bubba. I almost called you Phil. That would have been so offensive to you.
Last time Brett Dolan called me Phil,
yeah,
it's the last time we lost there at Baum Walker. Just saying. So
hey, are you going to North Little Rock next week?
I don't know yet. Probably not.
Okay, they play.
It's hard. It's hard to get away.
Yeah, that's a tough one. They play in North Little Rock Tuesday night of next week. So a lot of stuff to discuss next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, but you can listen to Bubba on Razorback Sports Network. We appreciate you joining us, and we hope to see you next week.
Go Hogs.
Thanks to Kendall King, where their design talents are showcased by teamwork. Kendall King, Shop Cart, and Soapbox. They're your design professionals with home run stats.